Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I posted on my story the other day a job description. There's a job listing for like a... Let me actually find it because I thought it was very interesting.
Yeah.
So everyone thinking we're making heaps of progress. So basically, on the 22nd of June in 2020, a Melbourne-based care service put up a job listing. And I'm presuming they do, it's in the disability sector. So someone who can like care and provide care for somebody who is disabled. And there's a range of what can be considered. It could be like amputees, people with like mental health issues, or people who are neurotypical, ton of things. Anyway.
Yeah.
But basically the post said that, you know, the ideal fit for this role is someone who has 2 or more years experience working in the disability industry with clients with autism. You must be reliable, very confident and trustworthy. We seek mature support workers, ideally aged 40 years and over. So, you know, that's fine. I think it narrows the pool down, but you need what you need.
Yeah.
Then they said the very next line, paragraph 2 in this job listing, is we request no dark-skinned Indian or African applicants apply for this role as per client request. So I posted so when I posted it, the majority of the comments were like, oh, you know what happens? Like, old people are racist. I'm like, this isn't about old people. It's about autistic people, but that's fine. I'm not here to argue. And I kind of just ignored the rest of the comments because it's either half of the people saying, like, this is so terrible. Like, I can't believe this is happening, like, in, you know, 2020, which is, like, shame on you. Like, of course this is happening.
Yeah.
We've made very little progress between last week with the black squares and this week with job posting, specifically requesting no dark-skinned people. And then the other half were like, yeah, fuck this shit, of course. So then I remember jumping on Facebook and saw this guy posted on Facebook. And this is just like some like random like white guy I know who also works in the Australian music industry. And he was kind of like, you know, what the fuck is this? A job ad with a melanin requirement because racism was such a long time ago, right? Just kind of like, you know, making a mockery of the post and being like, this is fucking ridiculous if you think racism has gone anywhere.
Yeah.
And then people were like, someone like, you know, yeah, this is so silly. There should be a law in place to stop discrimination. But what I find to be the most interesting is the amount of people breaking their back to make it make sense. People are saying,
why?
Who knows? We need more context. Maybe the client is an absolute head case from war or just has PTSD. What the fuck?
What? Wait, why are you justifying? Wait, why are you bending over backwards to justify what? White supremacists? Like,
why do we have to reach all the way to PTSD and war?
They'll never do this for black people too. Like, if I stole a Skittle, if I stole one Skittle, they'd be like, yeah, it's because she's war criminal. She's a black monkey ass war criminal ass psychopathic bitch.
No house training.
Yeah.
Jungle woman. And then people were like, you know, yeah, this type of request is unfortunately, it pops up regularly in aged care. Someone's like, haha, who wants to join a queue to care for a racist? Like, people are kind of saying, like, within an industry that's so under-resourced, people already don't want to work with in this industry at all. And now you want to put caveats as to who can and can't work. And my mum works in aged care, and she always tells me fucking stories. She thinks she's like, how do I explain it? She'll always tell me stories of, like, racist people with like disabilities, mental health issues, or old people who treat her poorly, and then after weeks and weeks of her coming back and being diligent and like caring for them, going above and beyond, they suddenly like her, and that's like a personal win, you know. And I'm just like, obviously I'm not gonna rain on her parade and say like that shit's fucked, mum, because she fucking loves helping people who are like, you know, the ones that society's left behind. She loves that shit. It's her purpose, she says. But it's like for her to not see how somebody who isn't black would have to go through that. And she's just like, yeah, it's part of the experience, right? This is what you have to do. Old people are just old people, right? No, no, this is fucked up. And then somebody is like, oh, you know, you never know. It might be more innocent than that. You know, we had an autistic boy at one school who had a bad experience with an African aide and therefore had a bee in his bonnet. Okay, sure. But then I had a bad experience with a white person. Now I'm going to put, don't put white people, oh my like God. No white people can book me for gigs. It doesn't make sense because all it takes is for you to flip the scenarios around and say, well, what would you say if this said, you know, this person can't hire, we won't hire white people. I'm so tempted to make an ad for a fake company and say, yep, so and so, but we request no white
no
people. White,
no Caucasians.
Or anybody yeah. with any lineage from the UK. Like, can you imagine? What would happen? Should we do it? I think we should do it.
Honestly.
I don't know.
I just want to see.
I just want to see, but... And this thread in particular has so many replies to it. I mean, that comment, the one about how it can be more innocent than that. And everyone's like, but even if it is, don't you think you'd provide more context if it was as innocent as you claim? This particular
I just don't understand.
X, Y, and Z, so on and so forth. But you've blanketly ruled out, like, people who are honestly going to be quite equipped from the job. Because why wouldn't you be? If you fit the requirement of being over 40, having more than 2 years experience of working with autistic people, why wouldn't you think it's appropriate to apply for the job? Now to rule out like a majority of your industry, because the like a vast majority of carers are going to be minorities.
Like, obviously.
So now you're saying, but actually, like, I just think it's super interesting. And
wow.
I think
were these people justifying in your DMs or was this like strangers?
No. This is on the thread of somebody else's post. Wow. People know not to come to me with that shit. I'm not doing that. I just hit that block. Somebody messaged me the other day and was like, hey, like, I love you. My friend said that she can't see your page and I think you might have blocked her. I'm like, if I did, it was for a good reason.
Wow. I love it.
Tell her I said, hey. but yes, I think it's so interesting that the lengths people are going through to muddy clear, concise language. Like, wow. If there needed to be more context as to why these people didn't want to hire someone who was Indian or African, they would have said so.
It would be there, yeah. But they said with their full chest, we don't want monkey-ass coons. Like, that's what they said. I don't know what would say.
And it's like, it's a job description. It's not a tweet. It's not 140, 280 characters. Oh, yeah, sorry, you have yeah. space. It's all the information that's like needed to let you know whether or not you're eligible to apply for the role is in the description.
Wow.
So what they should have said is, first line, we request no dark-skinned people. Second line, you need to be over the age of 40, because that's the priority, right? Anyway, let me make this fake fucking post.
Please make it, because I literally want to see. I need to know.
I need it to go viral and see honestly, what kind of energy.
People will lose their mind. Like, people will send death threats.
I'm just going to write thoughts.
Yeah. Wow.
This feels like something a YouTuber would do, and I feel like I'm aligned with it. But anyway, that was like my little mini rant because
people are out here thinking racism is over.
Absolutely. And I was having a conversation the other day where, like, because what's been happening over the past 3 weeks or so is that publications, magazines and online blogs, broadcasters, like TV stations, radio stations, have been messaging me incessantly to come and speak about racism on their platform.
Of course.
Whether it be trying to check racial biases, trying to put in a framework to understand, you know, white supremacy and white guilt, all these things. And to every single one, I've said no. Because it's not for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's very interesting that, like, these requests don't come with a check.
I
respect your time and I respect that you're in a position to educate. Here's X amount of dollars. Could you please write for me. Could you please come on and educate?
Yeah.
What is this fucking free work, you know?
That is another thing.
To every person, I have to respond with a variation of, I'm exhausted from trying to educate people. I've been talking about these things for months.
Oh my God, thank you. If you're really interested, you could just go,
here are some references that you can, like, read and cite and quote me.
People are so entitled to Black women's labor. It's disgusting.
Not interested. And I think also what I found is that there's always a fast timeline associated, a deadline. We need this by tomorrow.
The nerve. So the audacity.
So there's no payment. You're asking me to exhaust myself.
How is this not slavery?
My own experiences or others' experiences. You're asking me to bear the brunt of what's going to be a majority racist audience who's going to feel attacked by this information. And then you're going to tell me you need me to do this in a day, 2 days, 3 days. Who is this for?
It's just slavery. Like, this is what I mean. Like, just say you want slavery with your full chest. Yeah, I've noticed that too. And I'm not someone that magazines reach out to generally. But suddenly, out of the blue, like, now they care. And it's interesting because this one, I just ignored. But there's this one magazine that I just ignored. And they've come back to be like, hey, I'm just following up on my previous email. Like, wow, you even have the nerve to follow up multiple times.
It's like, let it go. And
like, that's how entitled you are to my slavery. Wow.
A lot of the feedback about the educational process for the topic of racism is that, you know, like, you have to hold space, you have to educate. These are all things that people don't have to do. I don't think people are in the wrong for asking, but the approach doesn't add up. And the intent and the impact, nothing is considered.
Nothing.
What I see when brands are running for, you know, my insight is that you're trying to capitalize.
Yeah.
Be quick. What, because it's trendy to care about racism? You want those quick clicks? Huh? Because, like, realistically, this is an ongoing, lifelong issue. It can wait a week. It can wait 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
What you should be doing if you're inviting people to share their trauma with you so you can get paid to do it
is at least provide
some infrastructure that they can do so comfortably.
Mm. But another thing that's not considered is, like, their audience. So the magazine that's reaching out to you has a predominantly white audience of dumb bitches. So now they're going to come for you when you just tell it like it is.
Exactly.
And they provided zero infrastructure for that.
There's
no aftercare
for that. There's none of that. They're going to come to my page, be like, this is that fucking bitch who's a
literally.
It's all of that.
And then you're going to be abused and for what?
And I was talking to a friend of mine and asked if she was getting similar requests because she exists in that, like, you know, Black of opinion have a space. Yeah. And she was saying no. And we were having a back and forth about how to approach it. I'm like, I'm not going to do any of this free labor shit. I'm not going to tell them how to best approach people. I'm not going to tell them what they should and shouldn't do because it takes no time to figure it out. Like, you're not even thinking. Imagine if it was like, you know, White Ribbon Day or something. And, you know, or imagine if suddenly there was this whole media uproaring about domestic violence. Let's say that's it. And you go to someone who's just gone on her Facebook and said that she's left an abusive relationship. She's in hospital getting stitched up. And you say, hey, can you quickly tell us about signs to look out for? We need this by tomorrow. Thank you.
Can you imagine?
Suddenly you know that your approach matters, right? Suddenly you know that you need to come through with tact and patience and you need to be more considered and you can't just go ask somebody to tell them what it's like to get bashed or to be in a situation where you feel as though you're fearing for your life.
Yeah.
Suddenly you can put that together real easy. But about racism, it's like, no, it's just like a fun topic, lighthearted.
Literally.
It's not top line, nothing too deep. Like, it's all deep.
No, but this is what I was saying about how for white people, Blackness is synonymous with suffering and pain. Like, they just don't consider at all how, like, you might be emotionally affected. Like, racism, I think, is just such a... And I also blame the internet for this because the way that, like, we've even memeified Breonna Taylor, the way we just turn everything into just memes and jokes, like, we turn Black death into memes. Did you see Ducky Thoughts? I think I'm saying her last name wrong. But did you see her Twitter or her tweet where she just basically posted a picture of herself and the caption was like, anyway, Breonna Taylor. And it's just like the way that like Black Death is just minimized and reduced to memes just really makes everyone, yeah, including white people, just think that like, oh no, like suffering is truly just irredeemable from blackness. Like it's just inseparable. The two are synonyms. Like, why would we consider their pain at all if to be black is to be in pain? Like, that's truly just how they see it. And it's, yeah, wow, it's wild.
It's so very interesting. And, like, I'm just so grateful that we have a backlog of these conversations so people can really just, like, yeah, jump back.
Yeah.
And speak about it. Somebody, like, some amazing listener posted a screenshot of, like, them listening to this episode or an episode and said, you know, like, it's a hard listen and you're going to be offended, but it's so necessary. And I'm like, exactly.
Yeah.
Where else, yeah, are you going to go to get this insight on race? I don't know, you don't have any black friends. You don't. So let's not even pretend that you have a black friend to lean on who's going to be able to provide you nuance and tact and empathy and resources and facts and cite things. It's not happening.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm so far past making conversations about race palatable because it's not worked.
Oh, and I thought thank it would. You.
I thought like being able to draw conclusions and like make it make sense. No, I just
and make
to
it
say
pretty.
It how it is,
yeah,
and
yeah,
hope that somebody fill in the blanks in the way that they need to. Because, like you mentioned in a couple episodes ago, we don't know what it's like to be white and to experience racism as something that's conceptual,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like not to experience, to see racism as a concept, as like a crazy thing that happens. So in the same way that I've now come to the conclusion that I don't have the right words to teach people about race, I just have to say
how you
it is
feel
what it is,
yeah,
and hope that literally you fill in the blanks where you need extra understanding.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And something I've been realizing too, I guess, because it's until all of this happened, it's really, we haven't been talking about black women's labor, especially when it comes to like black liberation movements, just how underpaid and overlooked black women have been. Like there's so many just black women on Twitter, on Instagram, just on social media doing the work, doing all this education, and they're broke, just completely and utterly broke. Like all these people that I thought, you know, we're doing fine, we're doing well, are like barely able to afford rent, and yet they're literally like leading movements. And it's like really got me thinking so much about how, which goes back to your point of like the audacity of all these publications to reach out to us without even like offering compensation for our labor, and just the entitlement that the world feels towards black women's labor is just fascinating to me. And it's also why, like, I recently also just started a Patreon, because it's like, why am I broke when I add so much intellectual value to the world? Like, why are so many of us black women just not getting paid for our break? And it's like, we've had to suffer so much to be able to know so much, and then to still die broke. Nah, it's just not it. It's not it. Yeah, I know there's been all these stories. There's been all these stories about like all these publications like Complex and OK Player, and like about how they've just been mistreating black women. Yeah, like the black women that work for them. Pay black women, fam. Pay black women for their labor. We've really normalized black slavery just far too much.
So yeah, if you're black and listening, start charging.
No, literally.
Or like me, because I feel like I'm in a weird position where I just can't be as reckless as I'd like to be.
What do you
mean? So I just, if you message me and, well, I just feel like recklessness for me is met with just more conversations. Like everybody, how do I explain it? If I tell people, don't message me, like let's say I posted a picture of some sunscreen. I say, I like this sunscreen. Don't message me, ask me about sunscreen. Who will message me? 100 people. Thinking I was talking to everybody but them.
Yeah.
I know you said not to message, but hey, I was hoping, but, and so it's one of those conversations where I'm kind of like, I can't police all these people who just don't care. So I just have to ignore or tell people, like, don't ask me shit. And then just leave it. Because it's one of those things where even if somebody paid me, like PayPal donated me to like $10 to tell them about white supremacy, it's not enough money.
It literally, there's it's not even, yeah, yeah.
It, like, it's not enough.
This is so not enough.
I'm also setting myself up by saying, like, why would you ask for something that's not going to compensate you in the way that you need?
Ooh.
Oh my goodness. You know what we need to fucking talk about?
What?
We need to talk about these these things people are doing instead of abolishing white supremacy. Like the Texans saying, like,
I'm
we're
done.
No longer gonna call master bedrooms. Well, new episode. We gotta stop.
Who asked you? Like, let's just continue. I'll just split this in half. Like, I'll just split this episode in half.
Great. All right, so this is what I want to talk about. So recently I've been having a thought about, like we've said before, compensation for sharing traumatic stories.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're in a position of influence, if you have, if you're a public, what do you call these people? Public?
Public figure.
Personality? Public figure. People automatically think they have access to your story because that's a big part of building a personal brand, telling a story to as many people as possible. But it gets to a point in time when the story has been told and what and the process becomes quite extractive in nature, where people aren't really interested in the story, they're interested in the clicks that your story will drive their website, you know? And so I got to the point in my career where I don't just tell my story for funsies. I don't speak about my experiences for free or for funsies unless I really believe that the person who's asking is asking from a place that's going to really benefit people. So like if a black business is asking me to speak about how to business tips, sure, I can tell that story because I can imagine there'll be people in your audience who are going to actually value this. If an Australian like fucking adolescent news site is saying speak about racism, I'm not doing it because like the brunt, the like the levels of abuse I'll have to like endure just for even like writing this article, it's not worthwhile to me. And so I started thinking about my friend. My friend moved to Tasmania a couple years ago for like this really great job, and she ended up buying a house and everything there. And through her moving, she was sharing like Instagram stories of her experience of like living in Tasmania, because it's not a place that like Australians really like regard as like a place you want to live. It's not a Melbourne or Sydney. It's a bit off the side. And so she would be showing all these cool experiences and people would be like, fuck, I need advice on where to stay. I need advice on where to go and whatever. Just kind of like mining her for information they were never going to use, you know, just asking questions for question's sake. So she was telling me, like, I started telling people that I charge for insight. And they stopped asking because suddenly it wasn't worth their time anymore. It wasn't worth their money. And therefore, they weren't placing a value on the information I was giving to them previously. It was just like all for shits and giggles. So she made a joke saying that I could imagine if you did the same, if you charge people to ask you questions about where you bought things, like a fucking finder's fee, they would stop asking because it's not that important. Like, do you really need to know where the cardigan is from? Do you need a cardigan that badly? Do you really need to know how I've experienced racism? Like, is it really something you have to know for your day to go about? But then I was saying, like, if I started asking for donations, if I was like, you know what, $10 and I will tell you about white supremacy, I'll break it down. $10 and I'll tell you about how, you know, what misogynoir is and how it manifests specifically in black women. $10 is not enough because these conversations are never transactional in a way that's simple. It requires levels of like holding space and empathy and tact. And I just don't care to hold that space for people who don't hold it for me. Because the nature of asking someone to share their trauma for you for education purposes, for study, is fucking, it's so slack. Like it's really mean. Because I can imagine in a lot of other instances, you create boundaries. Like there are some things you don't ask because it's inappropriate. If you knew an acquaintance who just left a mental hospital, would you start asking them about the food? No, you wouldn't, because suddenly it's too close, it's inappropriate. But suddenly when it's asking people to share their trauma of just existing in a black body, it's up for grabs. This one's an easy chit chat. We can talk about that, and it's not cool. So I was thinking, like, yeah, even if I were to ask for donations, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it at all. So providing infrastructure for people to ask me, knowing that I don't want to engage in that behavior, just isn't worth it. But it made me think about the intention of people asking and how, like, you know, it's if we lead with love and we assume that everybody has the right intention and they're trying to educate themselves to do better, then I can understand why you'd want to ask somebody who's created an open platform about, you know, quite heavy topics. But the point of the matter is, when we're talking about race, it's been very clear what needs to be done. Abolish white supremacy. So you've seen the table. Look at the table and see what you need to do. I don't understand why we need to go to different blacks to say, but what do you need? What does this black need? What does that black need? Because you haven't even looked at the greater picture and see what you're capable of providing. If you ask me what I need and I say $1 million, you don't have it for me. Suddenly you're doubling down on my trauma. Because suddenly you created a space for me to share and you don't have what I need. I often think that, like, when I'm sharing, like, when we share these traumatic stories, it gets to a point when it's so easy to start to, like, to root your identity in trauma. Because, like, if you need to talk about racism and how you've experienced it 5 times a day, that's suddenly my identity.
Yeah.
That's who experienced racism. Yeah. I don't want that.
I'm also so, like, very conscious of not being that person. Yeah.
It's, yeah, I don't want to provide a safe haven to have to, you know, share those conversations. But also, like, what needs to be done is clear. You just don't want to do it. And all this, like, let me reach out to this individual. It's stalling. You're stalling. Do what needs to be done.
But you're just stalling to get to the point where you accept that you just don't want to do it.
And this stalling, it gets internalized as trying. No, but what happened was I was going to abolish white supremacy by no longer using the N-word and, you know, no longer hiring or, like, checking my microaggressions when I'm hiring people for certain roles. But instead of doing that, I went and asked Flex and Bobo about their personal experience. So I wanted to hear, no, you don't need to do any of that. It's very clear.
Yeah.
Like, we told you what we want. We're abolishing white supremacy and also reparations. And land ownership.
And that's it. Like,
that's it. And so, like I said in the other episode, like Beyonce said, we're not going to ask you for any more when you can't even do bare minimum. And this is what brings me to today's episode. I saw a meme. It was a tweet that said that, let me fucking find it because this pissed me off. Okay. So, Texas realtors, it's a news headline, by the way, Texas realtors will stop using the word master to describe bedrooms.
And
the context of that is that, like, you know, master is where, like, the slave master would sleep and there he'd be raping black women to make mixed babies, all that good shit. You know what I mean? So that's where the term master came from. And so, you know, Texas's history is quite intertwined with slavery.
Absolutely.
Being the home of plantations. So, you know, this might seem like a big step. But as Bobo said, let's not look for symbols of progress instead of actual progress. This is not what people are asking for.
Nobody's
asking you to change the name of what we refer to master bedrooms as. It's not important. In the same way that I'm looking at, you know, like, The Simpsons came through, right? And they were like, producers for The Simpsons said that they will only be using black actors to voice black characters and using people of the right ethnicity group to voice the matching ethnicity group of the character. Why does it take 20 years to get to that point?
Literally.
What were you not thinking about up until this point that you thought that was just fine? And, like, the reason why I get so frustrated is because there's been an uproar in media for years about how it's inappropriate for straight people to play homosexual characters.
Yeah.
Or for Charlize Theron to keep playing every fucking ethnicity. But when it came to voice acting, you were like, you know what? Let me, a white guy, just voice the character of Apu because, you know, doing an Indian accent is funny. But now in your bid to show solidarity, like, this is what we're going to put our hand up and make a change.
Can you imagine?
Fuck that shit. Like, it's not the priority right now because we're so far from that hitting a spot where it matters. Like, yes, it's peanuts and it's great. We'll take the peanuts, but you're not getting pats on the back. You're not getting claps for peanuts because it's the fact that it took, like, pretty much a civil rights movement in 2020 for you to acknowledge that it could be inappropriate for a white person to voice stereotypically, in quotes, black characters. So you're telling me that that wouldn't have happened unless we had a civil rights movement?
Not at all. It literally it wouldn't.
Isn't that crazy?
But that's also how you know they've like, never cared and they still don't care. They just will never care.
You don't care.
You don't care.
And like these little like fucking breadcrumbs. And okay, it's my friend More Blessing said it best. She said like, you keep moving the goalposts of what is considered to be liberation and change. Like, we already said, create infrastructure that supports black people, give land titles back, reparations, you know, like these are all things that are, that can be done. But like, instead of just going from here to there, now we're changing the name, we're changing how we refer to master bedrooms, we're, you know, letting black people voice black actors. Yeah, we should have been doing that. So, like, why is this the step that needs to happen before the rest happens? This feels like a red herring, you know, like a Grindr. In the midst of, like, the Black Tile days, is how I'm referring to it. In the midst of Black Tile days, Grindr jumped on to make a statement that said that they currently have a filter in the premium app that lets you filter your prospective matches by race, so like, you know, white, black, Hispanic, whatever, and then like, you know, due to Black Lives Matter, they're going to take away that filter, right? Which is like, who's asking for that? Like, many have said they use that filter so they can date within their race, within their ethnicity, so they can find partners who are actually going to be interested in dating them and not have to sift through a bunch of people who are racist, you know. It's fine, but why in the midst of Black Tile days are you going to now pledge your allegiance to then not remove the fucking filter?
I just...
Who is that for?
Who? It's all a performance. It just gets to a
point where you're kind of like, can we just focus on what...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We need to be focusing on, because again, when we look for these symbols of progress, we lose momentum. We start to feel silenced because we're kind of like, well, can we complain when people are doing so much? Doing so much for who? This doesn't change my day-to-day, referring to a master bedroom as a main bedroom. This doesn't change my livelihood.
But you see it now. Having
someone get fired for voicing a black character doesn't change my livelihood.
Oh, listen. But what I'm noticing that's happening right now, remember the Scramble for Africa that happened in, like, the 1880s? I'm seeing the Scramble for Africa happen in the corporate world now, like, in the business world. I'm seeing how corporations are scrambling for Black and African talent to make themselves seem progressive and to make themselves seem like they're not racist. Like, did you see the collaboration that Kanye West is doing with Gap?
With Gap.
So Kanye and Gap basically hired this Nigerian-British designer by the name of Moalola Oganlesi. I'm probably destroying her name, probably butchering it. But basically, so she'll be the creative director of Kanye's Yeezy and Gap collab. And I just knew this was going to happen. Like, every single brand is going to scramble for their first black face. It's going to be the first black on the cover of whatever magazine. It's going to be the first black woman to be the first Louis Vuitton cover girl. Like, everyone is going to scramble for a black face in the hopes that we'll settle for that symbol of progress. And this is why I'm so against this idea that, like, being the first black is a symbol of success, because it's really not. And this is like one of our downfalls as Black people, that we really just settle for scraps. Like, there's nothing to celebrate about a Black person being the first to be accepted into a white supremacist institution that barely even sees them as human. Like, there's, it's, if anything, it's self-betrayal. Like, we need to stop settling for the scraps of white validation when we can and should demand for reparations, for liberation, and to be left the fuck alone. Like, it's disgusting.
And it's definitely worthwhile clarifying, because Bobo said it before. Everyone, just follow Bobo, because she stays educating us. But when we reference the individual, we're still attacking the system. So this is no shade to, like, Mo'olola.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, we're obsessed. Her.
Go get your coin. Like, show up in these spaces. Fuck it up. Like, because we'll, whatever you make, I'm going to buy. I love it for you.
Like, we're there. But we're also, there.
This is the kind of ammunition people use to say, well, I don't know why you're complaining. Here's a Black person in a position of power.
Absolutely.
And it's important to study language, because to say that someone Black is the first in 2020
it's
implies
disgusting.
That it hasn't happened
literally
for this many years. Why is that?
Because, like, you're racist.
No one's thinking about that. Nobody's thinking about that. And so it's really, this is like, we need to kind of critique the two, these things as separate. It's like, we can like salute Mo'olola forever because amazing, get your coin. But separate to that, you need to still be on these brands' backs, because, like, you don't get a pat on the back for elevating one Black person, because then what happens is you become the Black that everybody uses. Like, in Australia, right, for Australian listeners, how many Black people do you know who are public figures, right? Is it not the same Black girl in every beauty campaign? Me. Is it not the same Black girl in every music campaign? TK. Like, stretch it out. And so you start to wonder, like, yes, it looks like representation when you use the same Black faces, but how many more can you name?
Yeah, it's not
representation.
I know
you won't struggle
to
name more than, you can name 10 white people in music, 10 white Australians, 10 white Australians in fashion. You could do it, and that's fine, and it's perfect, but we can't be patting backs until it's like, this is the thing that I was noticing when all those CEOs were stepping down during the Black Tile Day. We've had the Bon Appetit guy step down, fucking Man Repeller, Leandra step down, Jen Gotch and Bando step
Wait,
down.
Wait, Leandra stepped down?
Like, uh-huh.
I didn't know why. What was her reason?
Babes.
I thought she was basically the queen of the liberal whites. So what happened?
Mm. Well, basically that she was complicit in, you know, not providing a space that was comfortable for Black people. Manapella made a lot of pledges to how they would help like elevate Black people during the height of like the Black Tile Movement Day, and failed to disclose that when COVID started around March, the first people they fired was all their Black staff.
Oh, why am I not surprised at
Coincidence?
All? Like, not surprised at
Coincidence?
All.
Coincidence? I don't know. So it was, you know, so when they were making pledges about what they do for Black people, everyone's like, well, what about the Black people that you fired? Like, shouldn't you start with those? If you have all this money and all this funding to elevate the random Blacks that you suddenly feel so tied to and you're pledging your allegiance for, go scoop the Blacks you dropped so quickly.
Yeah, where they at. This is why it's so important for us as Black people to stop aspiring for a seat at the table. It is not our table. It will never be our table. They do not want us there. And their table is raggedy anyway. Like, there is no seat at the table for us. We must stop aspiring to be the first Black at the table. Like, it is nothing but coonery to aspire to be the first, to aspire to be validated by an institution that sees you as a monkey. It's just coonery. Like, we just don't need the table. We can create our own.
Period. And it's tricky because there really are levels to this shit. But yeah, the thing that I found really interesting is that throughout the last 3 or 4 weeks, all the ways people are stretching themselves left, right, and center to make reparations, but I'm missing the point. When CEOs step down, right, especially when it's not prompted by the people who are employed by them, I wonder, if you're the one who's leaving, won't you just get replaced by somebody just like you from the board?
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely will.
I don't understand. Wouldn't it be more effective to stay where you are, take a pay cut, maybe do something like that, but also utilize the time that you now have to make those changes and see them through? Because what's doesn't make sense to me is if I'm the CEO of McDonald's and I get called out for putting all the blacks in the back cooking and doing stock and all the whites in the front, and I say, you know what, I'm sorry, I quit. Well, who's going to make sure that when the new CEO comes through, we see that change through? And so it's like, I'm not defending CEOs like who are quitting, because whatever, like if you want to quit, that's your business. But also, like, are we missing the point? Like, who's asking for this?
Yeah.
Who asked for this? Like, I really don't think that this is what people are asking for. And like I said, like, I don't expect people to, you know, talk to each individual black that roams the earth and see what works best for them. But collectively, if you're going to make such, such huge decisions, and such grave decisions, can you at least make sure your sacrifice is worth it?
Yeah.
Because who's going to lead the charge when you leave? Because who's taking that on? And so, like, I don't know if I was speaking to you about it on or off the episode, but when Alexis, Serena's husband, quit, he was, like, one of the very first to do it. And his justification for quitting or not being CEO was that he wanted to, like, create room and space for, you know, a person of color to step into that role, which on surface level, it's amazing. But what's going to happen is that, like, you get someone who steps into that role.
It'll be Diddy. The cooniest coon.
Who also is an agent for white supremacy. Literally. And we've all been there. You know, we currently still are there. Or you get somebody who might be, you know, an agent for change, but now is penalized for not owning the spot, for having the spot given to them.
Yeah.
So suddenly they're not good enough. You know, it's all these layers that we have to think about that I think get missed when we rush to show that we're not the bad guy. Newsflash, we're all the bad guy. And I think that's not what people are getting. Like, just some of you hoes are worse. Some of you hoes are killing people, but the rest of us are out here just upholding standards that are actually to our detriment. So it's like, what I'm seeing a lot in my emails is everybody saying a very, like, brands, businesses, people who want to work with me or get me to work with them in some capacity are all saying a variation of the same thing. We're committed to uplifting and upholding BIPOC voices. How? Like, by asking me to write an article?
For free, by the way. Commitment? For free.
For free. For free? That's your commitment.
No, that's literally white brands. They're like, we're committed to uplifting black voices by enslaving more black people. That's literally the best they can do.
And, you know, I know already we've seen it. The way people were, like, breaking their back to be like, I'm an ally. I love blacks. Let me show you on my feed how much I love the blacks. And then not a mere 2 weeks later, not one thing. There's not one, and it's like, the thing that I'm asking for, right? Scratch that, I'm not even asking for anything. But when you're given feedback about your behavior, let's say you're a fashion brand who's been called out for not using enough black models on your Instagram, yeah? Let's say that. Let's say you start injecting only black faces. Some might say, great, we're getting representation. I'm saying,
fuck representation.
If you already had access to these black faces, why does it take a civil rights movement for you to start using them? Are you telling me that you were purposely withholding these black faces until you were pushed to do so? This reminds me of that brand, this fast fashion brand called O Polly. And they're huge. They're like, look, they're one of the big ones or whatever. But they were called out a couple months ago about their, a couple of months ago, they were called out about the lack of inclusivity or representation on their Instagram feed. And how it's just skinny white girls. Show some fats, show some blacks, get into it. So what they did in a response is make a separate Instagram page called Opoly Inclusive.
I'm like, you've just made it worse. Huh? Like, so you're gonna other
so you the people segregate. You
claim to be including. Like, what?
And the whole point, like, people aren't pressed to be put on an Instagram page so they feel good about themselves. It's to increase their reach. It's to hopefully gain new followers. Now, as of today, Opoly has 3.3 million followers. So don't tell me you're going to make a whole new... And when this was, like, popping off, that page only had 3,000 followers. That's not a come up. To be put on an inclusive page that's new, that has 3,000 followers.
Wow.
What they want is to be elevated and amplified in and amongst what you're already doing, to not be othered anymore. And this is what frustrates me, is that the thinking just isn't there at all, not even a little bit. And I had somebody...
This is what we've been saying. We spoke about
last time when someone's like, it feels like we can't do anything right. You're not even trying.
That's literally...
Like, use your brain. Use your fucking brain.
We're just not rewarding people for scraps. Like, I'm over rewarding scraps. Like, I'm actually... But here's the... I think the hard pill to swallow first is that representation has and will always be a scam. Like, fuck representation. Like, why did we ever settle for that? But the hard pill to swallow is that there will never be black liberation in white spaces. The fight to be included in white spaces will always be futile because they will never see us as human. Like, blackness is by definition subhuman. Like, the definition of blackness as constructed and created and perpetuated by whiteness is subhuman. Like, to be black in the white gaze is synonymous to be other. So there will never ever be equality, there will never be equity, and there will never be liberation in white spaces. This idea of integration, it will simply never work. We literally have to create our own spaces. I feel like black people and white people are in a toxic relationship, which isn't to say that, like, we need to go and, like, literally separate physically, but we just, there's no reason why, if we're not abolishing the concept of whiteness as an institutional and systemic structure, there is no reason why black people should be expected to integrate into the system. Like, it's just a futile exercise to try and ask for representation in a space that doesn't even see you as human, to try and ask for inclusion in a space that doesn't even see you as human. And I know that, like, all the white people listening right now are like, but I see white people as human. No, but you don't. Like, I know you want to, but you truly don't. And it's not your fault. It's by cultural design. So it's just, as black people, we will save ourselves so much headache by dismantling the need for validation and inclusion and representation and just setting out and doing our own thing outside of the constructs of whiteness. And that also doesn't include all black people. Like, not all, like... half of the black people we know, it's too late for them. It's just, they're also just tools of white supremacy. Like, black people who aren't interested in cooning, the most we can ever do for ourselves is isolationism, is to just create our own spaces and go from there. We don't need to be married to whiteness. We can just break up and be friends and be civil and be cordial. But it doesn't need to be a marriage. Like, for what? Like, the idea of integration is just not sustainable. Because an effective society requires shared morality. And it's never going to happen under capitalism. It's not possible.
And it's funny because at one point, integration was the goalpost because it seemed too hard and impossible. Because if it was just easy to get black actors in mainstream films, we would have done that, right? Mm. If it was just easy to integrate black models into your feed, we would have just done that. It must be too difficult. And therefore, if we can work towards that, that would be amazing. So come to realize after a teeny bit of pressure, suddenly you've got blacks ready to go. You know, you've got them in your campaigns, you've got them in your writing, you've got them in your newsroom. Yes, you just hired them, but you found them. And it took
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that to me, it just, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because what were people breaking their backs so hard for before? Why did it need to be so hard?
Yeah.
If honestly, through fear of being called out, you've suddenly adjusted very quickly. And especially when I'm looking at brands, like big brands and corporations, you can't do shit overnight like a small business. You know, like, I thought you had your campaign images ready to go, you know, but within today and tomorrow, suddenly your feed is all blacks. Where did they come from? So you were able to scramble, but only because there was incentive. Because even now, there is incentive to be seen as inclusive. There was an incentive before.
Yeah.
You want to be seen as a black brand, but now people want to see blacks on your feed. What's going to happen? Let's get the same for plus size stuff. I'm trying to get some cute clothes.
Honestly, it's just...
But it's all interesting. And again, I was talking to my friend Mor Blessing about this, and I feel like people think this conversation about race has an expiry date.
Oh, maybe.
Knowing that within our lifetime, we're not going to get... And when I say we, I mean black people aren't going to get the level of reparations they want or deserve. What happens for the other minorities that have been fucked over? Because they're going to assemble as well. They're going to ask from you what has been asked from you right now. You're going to have to show, you're going to have to come to terms with the fact that you haven't been the best ally to your Asian friends. That's coming. We got a taste for it, you know, when coronavirus was at its peak and people just discovered that xenophobia is a real thing. But, like, again, minorities of every color and creed, your time is coming. And I feel like if you're a white person on the other end who's kind of like, oh, exactly. It's not stopping. And the closer you are able to kind of critically think your behavior, your expectations, your behavior, but not only, the sooner you're able to critique your behavior, but also the outcome of being good or doing good. And when you realize there's no, like, congratulations, that's going to be really hard because we're so used to being affirmed for doing the right thing. Right? But in the conversation of racism, like, you are going to be hard pressed to find somebody who's going to be thankful for you not being racist. We're so far past that. And so, yes, we're going to still be asking for representation and reparations and all of that, but we're not going to, like, kiss the feet or the ground that you walk on afterwards. It'll be like, thank you. Next. we're ticking things off a list at this point. And honestly, referring to a master bedroom as a main bedroom is not on the list, but, you know, thank you for wasting your own time. You know, the voicing of the actors, sure. I mean, we can add it to the list, but you still got a ton of other shit on this side that you got to get to.
Wow, I'm doing extra screaming.
Work doesn't absolve you of the work that needs to be done. So whether or not you do the extra work, the extracurricular, you get straight to what needs to be done.
She said what
either
she
way
said.
You'll be working. Either way.
Wow. I mean,
it makes me laugh.
Honestly, I'm also just so tired of debating about race. Like, can we get over the race thing and get to the class war? Like, I feel like debates about race are so redundant at this point. Like, I can't believe we're still here. I went to a protest some weeks back, and of course it got wild and the NYPD came and. And I was just telling the story to my mom, and she was like, oh yeah, no, we used to go through the same thing. And I'm like, wow, you lived through apartheid, and now I'm born, and I'm still, the experience is still the same. Like, the black experience is so stagnant. It's incredible. Nothing changes at all.
That's grim, but here we are. I mean, I just think there are so many ways that we can acknowledge the advancement of specific black people, because, yes, like, there are some black people who've been able to advance and, like, profit and whatever. It's all cute and dandy. But the advancement of the one hasn't elevated the many like it does in other racial groups. You know, like, it really is rampant individualism. Like, because I've come up, that didn't help the rest of you. Like, they still think you're a jungle animal, sis. They think I'm a reformed, domesticated jungle animal. It's the same shit, but, like, different viewpoints. So, so it's like operating with a dual mindset of being able to acknowledge when things are enjoyable and maybe even beneficial on a small scale. But there's still so much room to critique because, like, we're not even close to scratching the surface of what needs to happen. Not I mean, we're close. Still debating if racism is even real.
Can you imagine?
Like, huh?
People are getting lynched, like, in the same, literally hanging from trees, and they're still
people
debating.
Are literally being hung from trees. And in the same way, somebody will challenge me and say, oh, you know, but Oprah, but Beyonce, but whatever. Like, if you still think that the advancement of 5 black people, maybe there are, like, 50 black celebrities that are, like, popping for every, like, 100,000 whites. But maybe that's your point of view. If you're still debating whether or not, like, the experience of blackness versus whiteness is comparable, and if you don't see, like, if somebody posts a job description and says, no blacks, and you try and justify it, we're not even on the same page. Like, and so I'm not rushing to try and be, like, I think for a little while there, I was like, let's just make people understand quickly. It's like, no, because we had a whole civil rights movement in the 60s. Like, you've seen the same pictures I've seen. You've seen, I don't have some secret vault of history that shows me what you don't see. I showed you the fucking, like, human zoos with black children in them. I showed you the fucking human zoos with adult black women. We showed you the torture devices used to mutilate black people. We showed you all of these things. Like, if you don't see it and don't get it, and you're that person in my DM trying to be like, well, I don't understand, like, why we can't say the N-word, then, like, I've done all I can do.
Yeah.
And the sooner I can fuck off to the farm, live on acres, like, have stuff, the better.
Literally.
Because I'm not doing this fucking, like, martyr stuff. This is martyrdom. Explaining race to non-black people is martyrdom.
Oh, no, it literally... I have a friend that I'm actually thinking of unfriending. He's a white guy. And so, you know how at the beginning of this episode, I was talking about how, like, I've just had such a shit month. So he had called me to be like, oh, how are you doing? And I was like, yeah, no, I'm doing terribly. And I was explaining to him, like, being black is an extreme sport. And being a black woman is literally... I was explaining to him Afro-pessimism, and for anyone who doesn't know what Afro-pessimism is, I suggest Googling it. It's really interesting. I was just explaining to him that, like, being a black woman is in so many ways just a condemnation to misery because we're fighting so many wars at the same time. And he was like, yeah, but women of all races are miserable. And that's the last time I've ever spoken to him about because I'm just so tired of white people refusing to accept the reality that is Afro-pessimism. Like, I think something I was thinking about today is that in order for white people to be able to accept the true reality of the black experience, they first have to reconcile the true reality of whiteness within themselves, which is that whiteness is inherently violent and that they are a byproduct of that violence. Like, I think that's a really hard pill to swallow for white people because whiteness has a moral value attached to it that blackness doesn't. And until white people are able to reconcile their whiteness, they'll never be able to understand our blackness. But they can't reconcile their whiteness because the moral value attached to it is such a hard pill to swallow. And everyone has deluded themselves into thinking they're a good person. So there's the inherent paradox and
couldn't
the dissonance.
Couldn't be me. You can't come for my wig. I already said I'm a bad bitch, and I meant it.
Like, fam, the human condition, even without whiteness, is dissatisfaction. Add on the added layer of whiteness, and it's like, what is whiteness? And that's another thing. Like, we need to center whiteness more in conversations about race and history. Have you noticed that, like, when we talk about history, it's always like, oh, the black people freed themselves from slavery, and it's not like the white people decided to be less psychopathic. Like, white people decided to be less violent. Like, if we just change the language around, like, historical racial movements, it would be so much easier for white people to look at whiteness for what it truly is. There's so many layers, fam. There's so many layers.
And the layers will be discussed. You know what we need to talk about in another episode?
Yeah.
Heteropessimism. I don't know if I've talked about it before, but basically I was reading a tweet about it a few weeks ago, maybe months now, and basically saying how it's really embarrassing to hear hetero people lament being heterosexual. Like, it's become a personality type. It's a trend,
yeah.
Like, and the way, and it started because at the start of COVID, when everyone had to work from home or start to distance, not everybody, but you know what I'm saying, when it was encouraged to stay at home, to stay safe, people were like lamenting the relationship between their partners and being like, oh my God, I have to like spend a whole day with my husband and I hate him. Like, I want to kill myself. Blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like, why is so much, like, why are heterosexuals like this? Like, do you just like, why do you hate your partners and like think that's like a personality trait? What is up with that? Who, like, where does this self, because it's a level of like self-hatred
absolutely
that's like encouraged between heteros.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, we'll discuss it in a later episode, but I feel that was cathartic. That was hot.
It was. I really loved this episode. I think this is going to be... I'm going to close my DMs the day we release this one because I know it's going to be a lot. White people, don't take this personally, okay? Separate your whiteness from the institution of whiteness when you're listening to conversations about race. Makes it a lot easier to understand the black experience.
Yeah, the same way when I hear people hurling abuse about black people, I separate myself. It's not my problem.
Yeah, no, literally. 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 Wow, that would we might actually end racism in at least like 10 years if white people didn't take whiteness personally. Like, if they like understood that, like, oh, this is a construct that I was born into and not that like a construct I created.
Yeah, I mean, learn some coping mechanisms. How do you think black people do it?
Yeah, like, no, literally.
You have to really start to separate yourself from the way blackness is perceived and just get on with it.
Facts. Like, literal facts.
But like Bobo said, my DMs are close to everyone. Like, I'm honestly not having... I'd much prefer a DM from a black person, but I'm also not trying to have conversations about race, period. Like,
yeah,
not
for now. A bit redundant.
I'll open them back up to race conversations to black people when I'm ready to do it. But it's honestly like, it's the same shit on my end. Like, how to talk to white people about race. I don't want to do it anymore. And like, it's so funny because if you were to like draw parallels between our first episode about race and now, I was so much more open to it. And you all broke me down. You broke me down. I was rooting for you. I said, Bobo, let's have these shitty chats. Let's keep it open. Let's, you know, use the right language. Let's make sure everyone feels as though they're being... No, I tried. And you broke me down. So the DMs about race are close to everyone. I'm not doing it.
What did they do to you?
I'll speak to Bobo about race and my boyfriend. That's it.
No, literally, yeah. It is the height of exhaustion. It truly... truly is, especially when white people will gaslight you and be like, no, but I'm suffering too after that. Nah. Mm-mm. Just not, we're just not
on
doing
to bigger
it
and better things.
Truly. Truly.
Come talk to me when we're not getting excited about voice actors getting fired and like, you know, Grindr making promises they're not fulfilling. Like,
when we're opening our purses, let's discuss. I'm ready.
When instrumental change happens, when change so grandiose that we think it's fake happens, that's when I'm logging back on. For now, I'm just roasting everybody's poor attempts to be allies. That's what I'm spending my time doing.
Honestly, that's so productive. Like, it really is. I love it. So thank you guys for listening. I'm going to split this episode into two.
Yeah.
So it's going to start off really chaotic. Follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, as Bobo and Flex on all the platforms. let's continue this conversation and we'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.